Welcome to the statewide conversation about Minnesota's response and plans during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you did not get a chance to send or call in your questions this week, email covid@ampers.org or leave a message at 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton, live from KAXE Studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in today. We are teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Ampers, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. From Executive Order 20-01 on March 13th to declare a peacetime emergency, Governor Tim Walz has been regularly updating the public on the current pandemic and our state. He will be joining us in a few moments. Yesterday was the announcement of Minnesota's Safe Learning Plan. It's a localized plan where the Departments of Education and Health will work with school districts and local health officials to help with the decision of how their schools will operate in September. We've got a lot of questions about education and some more general questions to be bringing to the governor of Minnesota when he calls in to join us for this conversation today. I'll give you a little update on the state numbers. They are updated every day at 11 o'clock on the website for the Minnesota Department of Health. So as of today, July 31st, in the state of Minnesota, there have been 54,463 positive tests with a one-day increase of 779 cases. Current numbers on deaths in the state due to coronavirus, 1,600, and additional probable 40 deaths. The good news, though, and there is good news, COVID-19 patients no longer needing isolation, 47,289. Right now, the community contact from an unknown source is the top likely exposure cited by the Minnesota Department of Health. That's followed by known community contact, congregate living. Some of the numbers, we've got some increases throughout northern Minnesota and throughout the state. The executive order that came out last week and went into effect last weekend was Executive Order 20-81, requiring Minnesotans to wear a face covering in all public indoor spaces and indoor businesses, unless you are alone. That mandate is now in effect. The Minnesota Department of Health says a face covering is not a substitute for social distancing, but it's especially important in situations when maintaining a 6-foot distance from other individuals who are not members of the same household is not possible. Research has shown that the use of face coverings is a simple and effective step to slow the spread of COVID-19, especially when combined with other prevention efforts such as physical distancing and hand hygiene. In the press conference yesterday to the state of Minnesota, the governor stressed that wearing a mask is going to make it easier for school districts to open. It will keep everybody safer. And again, that is a mandate that is in effect right now in the state of Minnesota. The County Public Health Departments of Minnesota remind you that if you receive a call from the Public Health Department, you are asked to take that call in case you have come into contact with someone with a confirmed case of COVID-19. Contact tracers will provide information and guidance. And guidance on isolation, quarantine, symptoms to watch for, and how to prevent future spread. This is the statewide conversation with Governor Tim Walz. We are awaiting his call. He is a busy man, and we will be getting into some questions that came in throughout the week that have to do with, a lot of them have to do with education. This half hour each week on stations all across the state is really citizens' opportunity to get their questions answered. So we really encourage that you send in your questions. You can do that to covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. And past conversations with either officials from the health department or Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan can be found at kaxe.org or ampers.org. Dr. Michael Osterholm from the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy says that we are all still at the very beginning of this pandemic. Of particular concern around the country, younger people gathering in groups that may spread to older relatives and coworkers. He says the one thing you have control of, the one thing that can save you, is distance. Distance is even more important than wearing masks to lessen the spread of COVID-19. Stay tuned. We will be bringing you a conversation with Minnesota Governor Tim Walz.
I was raised up by my mom alone. Worked herself into the grave, trying to make us a home. She never left South Carolina. No, no. My old man didn't stick around to see me groan. He was long gone before the coffee got cold. Couldn't even know where to find him.
You are listening to the statewide conversation about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic. We are very glad to welcome Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to the conversation today. Thank you for being with us, Governor.
Hey, thanks, Heidi. Thanks for having me. Look forward to the conversation.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions from our listeners across the state. Yesterday was the announcement of the Safe Learning Plan, and I want to get into that in more specific. But I also want to ask you, since the pandemic hit last spring, you've been committed to speaking directly and frequently to Minnesotans. Why was this important to you during a pandemic? And tell us.
For most of us, and of course, I mentioned that yesterday marked the 5th month since the first death in the United States when we first, and you have to think back, very few people were even hearing much about COVID the end of February, and here we are. It became apparent early on, especially when there was such an unknown. Unknown breeds fear. It breeds misinformation. I thought it was really important to, as we were getting information in real time, to communicate with Minnesotans, to get out there and talk about what was happening. I think it's unfortunate that over the last 5 months that some aspects of this pandemic have taken on some partisan tone to it. But I think for the most part, most Minnesotans are wanting to get information that they can use to protect their family, to make sure their business is thriving, and to think about what the future is going to bring. So I think it is really important to continue to communicate.
Let's start with a question that we got from Kurt from Ely.
Yeah, it's Kurt from Ely. I hear people talking about the unconstitutional orders of the governor and all that sort of stuff. I'm wondering if you could briefly summarize what the governor's authority is in declaring emergencies and how wide-ranging his authority is and how that whole process works to help try and dispel some of this talk about unconstitutional this, unconstitutional that. Thank you.
Your thoughts?
Sure. Thanks, Kurt. And I get this one, and I think to share with everyone, I'm a legislator, Article 1 of the Constitution, as a 12-year member of the United States House. Separation of powers is critically important. So I think when people talk about that and they're worried about executive powers, that's a legitimate American concern. And I would be disingenuous if I said that I didn't think, if I disagreed with some presidential executive orders and overreach, and then say we can't, you know, that I'm not held to that same standard. I want to be clear. The Minnesota Constitution grants governors the power under Chapter 12 to declare peacetime emergencies when an act of nature endangers life or property. It's what we use during snowstorms that lets me call up the National Guard to go rescue folks on the interstate. It's what we use when we activate our emergency operations center around flooding most every spring, and we coordinate those efforts. It's those types of things that they understood that there needs to be a separation of power. But for example, the legislative process is meant to be slow and cumbersome. That's part of the democracy. When I needed to order N95 masks for our doctors, I was able to get those ordered within 24 hours, which would have taken anywhere between 2 and 3 months through the legislative process of authorization. Now, each of those powers then goes back to either be canceled by the legislature or they expire when the emergency goes. I will tell people, I don't believe the framers of the Minnesota Constitution anticipated a disaster going on for months. And just to be clear, there is nothing in the statute that says that I, as governor, need to go back and get approval from the legislature. But I asked for us to do that. I took a more conservative approach to do this. So if you're wondering why every 30 days they come back and vote to take these powers away or not, that was our interpretation to ask them to do that. If at any point they feel like, collectively, that I am overreaching, they can do that. But I can tell Minnesotans, we use these powers judiciously. I've used them to authorize that trucks can carry heavier weights when we were trying to dispose of livestock when we had a plant shut down. I've used them to make sure that we held evictions from people during this time so that they couldn't be kicked out of their home because they were staying home like we asked them to stop the spread of COVID. So what I would tell Kurt and I would tell your listeners is, I think it's totally appropriate to question this. In 49 of the 50 states, governors have this. In the one state they don't, in Wisconsin, the governor yesterday is challenging that again because he needs to have the ability to ask for masks. So this is a very fundamental part of our democracy. I think Minnesotans need to know that those powers were granted to the governor through the legislature, through the democracy that we have, and that each 30 days we go back to the legislature and ask them to approve or disapprove. And the thing that I would say to Minnesotans, I would love nothing more than to have all of these decisions be able to be made by the legislature. They just can't move quickly enough. They just don't have that capacity. And at some point in time, the power was instilled in the executive to make those calls.
Well, kind of along the same lines, it sounds like the decisions that you make are not unilateral. You aren't just making those. And you certainly stressed that yesterday in your press conference, that it was a collaborative plan and local decisions on schools will also be collaborative for education this fall. Can you tell us who you listened to and how that plan came together?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say we listened to parents, first and foremost, students. We listen to school administrators. We listen to school boards. We listen to public health officials. We listen to national public health officials, and we listen to international public health officials. I ask them to gather plans. How do they do school in Japan? How are they doing school in New Zealand? How are they doing school in Maryland? And whatever it was, and gathered those things together. Educational experts at the Minnesota Department of Education. And just to be very clear, Republican legislators were very clear to me that they wanted local schools to be involved in this decision, and I agree with them. I think that was the case that we tried to do. So on all of these decisions, whether it's I talked to the Chambers of Commerce, they stood with me the other day when we were handing out masks because the Minneapolis Chamber and the Western Suburb Chamber of Commerce and Liberty Packaging, these are folks that have been asking for us to do this mask mandate so it'd make it easier for them to run their businesses. And so we consult constantly with people on this. And I know where it becomes somewhat political, if I make a decision that legislators disagree with, they believe it's a unilateral decision. That's not the case. I am listening to, and I wish the public health officials, to be candid with you, would come to me tomorrow. I get numbers every morning and say, Governor, there's no more COVID. There's no need for us to have any restrictions on large gatherings. We can have a concert at U.S. Bank Stadium. Let's do it. But I have to not make that decision based on what I want to have happen, but what the reality is.
It's Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. You're listening to our statewide conversation. So data informs the decisions of local schools. That's one of the elements. Part of the equation involves COVID-19 positive tests in the past 14 days by county. I know it's a lot more intricate than that, but can you kind of give us an idea of how you have figured this?
Yeah, and this is one to provide a picture of where we're going. And I think for your listeners, especially in greater Minnesota, this is something they've been asking for, and I have struggled hard with this. I've worked with states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan who tried to do this. It is very difficult for me when someone says, hey, I'm up here in Lake of the Woods, and we didn't have a single case until this week, we could have been doing all these things until that time. And what I would tell them is, as we're learning more about COVID, where it spreads and how it spreads, we can adjust the decisions that we're making. The decision early on across the country and across the globe was to shut down, try and stamp down transmissions. To be clear, if you get a low enough number, this virus can't stay alive. It needs to go from one person to another. When it's really spreading is when it goes from one person to two others, to three others, to four others. And so looking at that countywide data, what we know about schools is, and Dr. Osterholm here in Minnesota and a national, international expert on this, talked about maybe early on when we shut down all schools, if we'd have known then what we knew now, we might not have done that. And we have more PPE, we have more testing, and what we're seeing is in these counties where we can manage it and the spread in a school, if it's done right, we believe that these counties that, say, fall under a number of 9 or less per 10,000 residents over a 14-day period, that means the chance of community spread is so small that if we make these mitigation efforts, we can keep that open. Now, if we start to see that creep up to 15, to 20, to 25, we need to change our approach to that so that we break that spread. The whole goal here is to break and slow the spread of this until we get to a vaccine and to make sure that if you do get sick, you can get to the hospital. So that data is important. But what I also want to recognize, local schools know what their buildings look like. They know the space they have. They know what their filtration system looks like. They know what's happening in their local community. And I think that coupled together, all of that data and all of that local knowledge and the support that the state is going to give in testing and PPEs and masks, all of those things, gives us a fighting chance here to do what we know. And I tell you this as a 20-year teacher, parent of a 13-year-old, our kids need to be in the classroom. And so when people say get them, I see people telling me, Governor, get kids back to school. 100% on board with you. But there's an addendum to that. Get kids back to school safely. And that's what I think this plan does.
You know, I appreciated yesterday that you explained, because we still, especially in rural areas, not everybody's on board with the mask mandate. And you expressed that if we were, the schools are going to open that much quicker if everyone was wearing their masks.
It's true. And I think, and I don't want to talk anyone out of, I think there needs to be the Kurt's question earlier, question everything people in elected office do. I think especially executives. Question everything we do, see if we're basing it on the facts, and then fight those fights that need to be fought where you think it's wrong. I think you were wrong, Governor, on this one. I think we could have done restaurant seating or whatever it might be. I would try and defend that with data. The one that I do not understand one of the most cost-effective and one of the most epidemiologically effective means is wearing the mask, especially when you're inside, and limiting social interactions and social distancing and washing your hands. Because I think everybody on your call, I would want nothing more than to not have to do another COVID-19 briefing. I'm sure the president would say the same thing. And I think the way we get to that is, let's just crush this thing. If you want your school back in the fall, if you want to see the potential for potentially sports or extracurricular activities, just crush it. And I think especially in greater Minnesota, many of you are probably saying, that's what we've been trying to do. We've had relatively low numbers. I think now just crush this thing. Put an end to it. That way, if there's 4 or 5 cases with the testing capacity we have now, we'll test them. We'll find out who they talk to. We'll test them. We'll isolate those folks. If they're students, we will adjust their learning schedule and educate them at home. Hopefully, though, we could keep the whole rest of the school open. We could keep the rest of the things going. And that's how you live with COVID until we get the vaccine.
Well, crushing it sounds, I can hear the football coach in you when you say that.
Oh, my gosh. And I think we've gotten into this where we kind of fought amongst ourselves and we're learning so much more, some of it good, some of it wrong. I mean, I think we need to know here, the common enemy here is a virus, that we've learned more about it. And like I told people, these to protest or to be angry with me is a very democratic thing to do. That's what you do in this country, and I understand that. I would just tell people, put your energy into doing that rather than fighting the mask mandate that I it's not personal, it's health related. So I think if folks want to know, how do we get out of this together, how do we get back to a little more of the normalcy on this, let's end this thing. And I'm feeling a sense of togetherness around that in Minnesota. We saw those numbers yesterday come out for the U.S. GDP dropping by a third. I mean, this is catastrophic. This surpasses the Great Depression. And there's families out there that are hurting. If we want to get this right, let's just end this thing. And I'm telling you, there are models out there. Other countries have done it. We can do it.
We heard from Allie. She is a teacher in northern Minnesota. She's concerned about testing for teachers since they're going to be exposed to so many people. Right now in her region, the local healthcare provider will only test if you have symptoms. Will the teachers have better access to testing?
Yes, and I want to thank Allie for her work, and I think this is a totally legitimate thing. The folks who say that there's relatively low hospitalization or death rates amongst our young. If there's anything in COVID to be thankful for, it's not taking our children in large numbers, which is great. But what we do know is those children can get it and they can spread it. So in the schools, the real concern is amongst the staff, people like Allie, or if someone has an underlying health condition. So we are very focused on the cleanliness of that building, the personal protective equipment, which we'll be supplying. And Allie's right about the testing, a very robust testing measure. The one thing I can tell Allie is the state of Minnesota is investing in a technology that will allow us to have a little test with an envelope, has a little vial in it. You put saliva in it, you seal it up, you send it in, you get your results back in 24 hours. So Allie's teaching, a kid sneezes in her classroom, she's a little nervous about that, she fills out that test, she sends it in, and we know. That's what we're trying to do. That, in addition to, we will be testing schools. If we start to see, say, for example, a meat processing plant starts to show some tick up, we will bring teams in and test that whole school if need be. And I would tell people out there who are listening, the state of Minnesota is in top 10 in capacity. We did and invested. I want to thank the state. I want to thank the people, the Mayo Clinic, the University of Minnesota, and the healthcare providers. But keeping in mind, these are private healthcare providers. And while we're saying we want everybody to get tested, each of these health providers can make somewhat of that decision. When it comes to teachers, the state will be directing those testing. The state will be making them available. And I would, and tell Allie this, as a 20-year classroom teacher, I would not put you back into a situation that I myself would not go into. And my children are public school students. They will follow the guidance of their superintendents, whatever they may be. And I, as governor, will listen to those local officials on when my son goes back into that classroom. So we'll be there for that.
We had another question that came in through Facebook. What about someone who is a single parent, works full time, has a child with the underlying condition? Does the state have an obligation to this parent if that child has to stay home and distance learn?
Yes, I believe so. And I believe the state of Minnesota did what only a few states did. We provided unemployment insurance for folks who felt like even when they were called back to work that they could because of an underlying health condition, they didn't feel like the workplace was safe. If that parent, either for themselves as an underlying health condition or their child has it, say, for example, your local school opens up, but you are uncomfortable sending your child back to that, the schools in the state of Minnesota needs to provide, and I don't believe it's the best method, but we've learned a lot about it, we will provide a distant learning model. And we understand that the decisions about whether a school is open or not has huge ramifications of whether parents can go back to work and how they go back to work. It's one of the things is that we were the first state and one of the few states that our public schools provided health or child care, in many cases free, to our first responders and emergency responders early on. I think there's a reason when people, you know, say, oh, we have to open up the state. Minnesota businesses are as open as almost any state in the country. We've done it in a manner that I think was smart and strategic, always focused around worker safety too. There's customer safety involved, but worker safety. This mask mandate, one of it is I go into places and I see workers working in convenience stores or whatever, and they're face-to-face interactions every day. There needs to be plexiglass barriers there and masks to protect those people. The same thing with this parent. If the parent is not feeling safe about that child going back, the state will work with you, and we will try and do the best we can. We're going to need some help from the federal government to continue on some of the CARES dollars we're using. I want to make sure that Minnesotans know that those federal dollars, which are tax dollars, Minnesota pays more into federal tax and gets fewer back than almost any state in the nation. So we are certainly not taking from the federal government. We're using what Minnesotans have. We've set back about $250 million in addition to about $180 million that we spent this summer getting ready for school. So we're doing all we can to make sure that that situation is as safe as possible. But we will adjust each and every family as needed.
I'd like to take a listen to a superintendent. This is Jan Murray from the Fond du Lac School.
Just because we're coming back to school, if we come back to school in person, does not mean we're going to continue consistently. If and when we shut down, our students and staff will be prepared to do exactly what we did in March. However, it'll be better. We will have better services for them, and we will continue doing the lunches that worked really well. It gave us at least some sort of stability and contact with our families by doing the lunch service. So we will continue what worked, and we're working on what's going to be an improvement. And we're also preparing for all the what if.
That's from station WGZS, Jan Murray from the Fond du Lac School. Your thoughts, Governor?
Well, first of all, that's exactly why we did the plan we did. That's the type of leadership that we know will get us through this. That's why we said data-driven with localized control. I think Superintendent Murray, I can feel the care in her voice, and I can feel the sense of how they're ready to adjust. And I think Minnesotans do need to recognize we are in a such better position. We asked our schools and our parents to deal with a retooling of public education that had never been seen before. And in many cases, it didn't work as well as it could have, but it wasn't for the lack of effort being made. We've learned a lot. And when I hear Superintendent Murray say that, we're going to beat this thing, and we're going to adjust accordingly. And I think she's right. Where you start on September 8th may not be where you're at in December, and it may not be where you're at in May. And I think when people now are, COVID makes us somewhat pessimistic. If we do this right and we do masks and the vaccine trials continue to go on, I think the thing that we're looking at is you may not start back in school, but we may be having proms and graduations in the spring. I think that's where all of us want to get to. I don't want to set unrealistic expectations, but I do think that it's important for us to understand we are not totally at the mercy of whatever COVID does. It will do what it does, but we can direct it. We can change it. And I think hearing Superintendent Murray say, you know what we're going to do in the age of COVID? We're going to care for and educate these children, whatever it takes. That's very encouraging to me.
I know we don't have much time left with you, but I wanted to get this out. This Carrie emailed us. She said, how concerned are you about the long-term effects of what students are going through right now with COVID and this disruption to their schooling?
Very. I appreciate that thoughtful question. I appreciate it both as governor, as an educator, and as a parent. I have got a young man going into eighth grade. He needs to be in school. He needs to get that help. He thrives better with that, and his teachers are fantastic in the St. Paul Public Schools. I worry, and I say I'm concerned about it. I worry, but I think it's up to us to how they view the world. I think these are going to be obviously shaping moments, that life-changing moments for our kids as they grow up. They are going to forever remember the pandemic of 2020. I mean, all of us are too young to remember in 1918, but I remember my grandparents and talking about the Great Depression, and my mom, who's still alive, talking about the Great Depression and what it was like. I want to make sure that we get them back. I want to make sure our littlest learners, my heart is breaking for those parents who had kindergartners last year. And it's so critical. We know what the research shows, kindergarten through third grade. There's so much we can do. So I do worry about that. But I think the upside of that is listening to people and educator leaders like Superintendent Murray and folks across the state, we're going to adjust to this. And we need to have our littlest ones see us working together. And I'm not asking everybody to hold hands and a kumbaya moment. I'm asking us to look at what the data is. Know that our kids are watching us. Let's debate where we have differences, but let's defeat COVID and educate our children and then work on those things that will come afterwards. I do think there will be some long-term historical trauma involved that will come out of this, and I think it's worth noting. This has hit harder in communities of color. It has hit our Black communities, our Indigenous communities. It's hit our rural communities in some cases because of economic disadvantages around things like broadband access. So I do worry about this, and I think we need to take that into consideration of what education looks like after COVID.
Well, we had lots more questions for you. You did a great job filling in for your lieutenant governor this week. We appreciate your time.
Well, she loves this, so I want to get the opportunity, if you'll have me back. But yes. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan oftentimes talk about this, and I want to thank your listeners for the thoughtfulness in this. I want to thank them for continuing to be so engaged and care so deeply. And we can get through this. We're still sitting in a little bit of a precarious spot, but Minnesotans have bought us a lot of time to deal with this. So thank you for having me.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, thanks for your time. This broadcast is a collaboration of the 18 community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Amper's Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation at KAXE.org or past conversations. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE.